Good evening. This is the proceeding of the Pacifica Foundation Programming Committee meeting. My name is Rob Robinson. I am the convener of this meeting, and the purpose of this meeting tonight, the formal business we will conduct, will be to elect a permanent chair and secretary for the Programming Committee for the current year. However, before that takes place, we have a special guest that will be addressing us, Professor Lawrence Lessig of Stanford University, who will be talking to us about licensing and intellectual property issues regarding the Internet, and in particularly as they affect digital distribution, which is an area that has great potential for the expansion of local station audiences for Pacifica. However, the first item of business I want to conduct right now is to call the roll. Sarv Randhawa.
Here.
Attila Naji. Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Alan Minsky.
Here, and we'll be flitting around for the next 10 minutes, but then you'll have my full attention.
Thank you, Alan. Sherna Gluck. Kimberly King. Kimberly King. Okay. Lisa Davis.
Present.
Serene Roberts. Steve Brown.
Here.
Teresa Allen.
Here.
Lisa Welch.
Here.
Adnan Lakhani.
Here.
Joni Eisenberg.
Here.
Kalanji Olusegun. Rob Robinson. I'm present. Okay, we currently have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 members. We have a quorum. We have 10 out of 15 members present at this time. The second thing I would like to ask is for a member of this committee to serve as secretary, as recording secretary, purely for this meeting. Would someone consent to do that?
I nominate Otis.
I'll do it. This is Teresa. I'll do it if I'm not expected to summarize what Professor Lessig is doing, is discussing in any way.
Okay. As Dave said, we're going to have an audio feed. We can always get it transcribed if we need to.
Teresa, thank you so much. Teresa is also the secretary of the PNB, so she's taking on an additional burden. Thank you very much, Teresa.
Just for this meeting.
Pen in the West.
Just for this meeting.
Okay. I want to inform the members of this committee that as a general policy on committee business, other members of the Pacifica National Board who were not elected to this committee may come on the call and may audit the call. If time permits during the call, we may allow other members that are on the call, members of the PNB, that are listening to ask questions. We have with us this evening, for example, David Adelson from KPFK, who is the chair of the Pacifica National Board, is on the call with us, and we appreciate David being there. So I just want everyone to know that is a practice of the PNB. The second thing I better bring up right now is the issue of muting your phone. On these conference calls, if you have background noise, if you're putting dishes away, taking them out of your dishwasher and putting them in the cabinet, or if you've got dogs barking or children crying, it will be amplified for all the people on the call and make it very difficult. You can mute your phone on this call by pressing #1. That will mute your phone so that the background noise in your environment will not translate over the call. However, if you want to say something, or if you're
Larry Lessig,
asked to get a vote, hello?
Hi, this is Larry Lessig.
Professor Lessig, thank you very much.
Welcome.
This is Rob Robinson. I'm the convener of the call.
Hi.
Hi, we'll ask you to start in just a minute. We've established quorum. We're just going over a housekeeping matter.
Okay.
So those of you that are on the call that don't know how to mute your phone, what you do is you press #1, and any background noise will not come over the call. However, if you want to speak, you have to push #1 again to make yourself heard. But it's the pound button. It's not the star button or something that begins with the letter P. It's the number symbol pound. Okay? Is that clear?
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chair, Rob?
Yes.
Did someone else come on the call?
Yeah, this is Greg.
Greg Gumma, the executive director of the Pacifica Foundation, has joined the call. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a quorum right now, and we have a special guest. I for those members that came on the call earlier, I indicated that we began a discussion last year as a result of the program policy document, the section of the program policy that deals with licensing and syndication of Pacifica programming. We were able to speak with Professor Lessig in December, that is David Adelson and myself, about the issues around licensing and syndication of programming on the Internet. This could be a big boon for local station programmers and producers who want to figure out both how to reach wider audiences for their programming beyond simply the local station, and also how they may be able to use licensing and syndication to generate resources that will help them continue to do their programming work. And Professor Lessig very kindly consented to provide Pacifica with his best advice about these issues, how they're working out on the Internet, what the challenges are, how a progressive organization like Pacifica might take advantage of the Internet and licensing issues as a means of helping grow its local station audiences as well as its national audience. So we're going to ask Professor Lessig to give us an overview of this for 15, 20 minutes max, after which we will give the members of the committee an opportunity to ask questions. When that's done, we will go immediately to the formal business of this call, which was agendized. That business is to adopt a permanent chair and secretary. We're going to be doing that by STV voting methods, which means you're all going to have to send in a ballot. So we will not have the completion of that vote at the end of this call, but that is the formal business that we will conduct. I will also touch on the issue of where we are with the programming policy before we close the call out. So I'd like to ask everyone to please agree to let Professor Lessig take this time, which is the only time on his schedule, to take up the discussion of licensing and intellectual property on the Internet and give us a sense of how Pacifica may want to look at these issues in order to grow in the future. Is there any discussion of that before we welcome Professor Lessig to make his remarks? Hearing none, Professor Lessig, thank you very much, Dr. Lessig, for taking this time to discuss these issues with Pacifica again. Dr. Lessig, are you there? #1. Okay.
You went to the teaching class.
Larry Lessig.
Okay,
welcome.
Here he is.
He's back. Welcome,
sorry. Sorry, I just got thrown off just as you said you were going to ask me to talk.
you may take up the conversational cudgel.
Okay, so, and again, I apologize if I get thrown off, but I'll come back as quickly as I possibly can. So I'm grateful for you letting me share some of the ideas we have and the things we've learned a little bit about in the context of creating content on the Internet. And I guess the way I'd focus the conversation is just to think about what is the most exciting new stuff that we've seen produced in the context of media, not just on the Internet, since the digital revolution. And in my view, the most interesting, exciting stuff that's been produced is stuff that's being produced in a citizen-driven way, where citizens are participating in creating content and sharing their views and ideas with other citizens, and doing that in a way that nobody ever predicted or planned on. And I think this feature of the Internet, when you think about blogs and podcasts and everything like that, is the essential feature of what's going to be exciting in the next 10, 15 years, or let's say, just be humble, let's say in the next 5 years. and in that sense, then the problem for existing media is how do you be relevant, how do you be maintain relevance in that world? And what's the way in which you are part of that creative process rather than competing with that creative process? And I think what we're seeing as people think about that is that they realize that the way to become part of that creative process is to enable their material to literally become part of that creative process, not in a way that loses its association or affiliation, but in a way that does become useful and valuable to this new form of creative expression. So between the model of producing content that's efficiently spread out there with licenses or rules that say there's not, you can't use this or you can't do anything with this except watch it or consume it exactly as how we say, versus content that's made available to be consumed but also to be reused in ways that make it more valuable to the community of creators, my bet is that the second type of content will be the most exciting kind of content and most valuable kind of content out there. That's an argument that has nothing to do with public values or public values related to public radio. That's an argument just about how to make it in the world where 20 million or 100 million people are creators as opposed to 5 or 6 major producers as creators. Now, I think that argument becomes much stronger, I would think, although, of course, you're expert in this and I'm not, but I would think that argument becomes much stronger when you think about what public radio or public broadcasting is supposed to be about. Obviously, in the world where it's broadcasting using technology of the 1960s, you can't help but be broadcasters in some sense, just like everybody else is broadcasters. But in the world of digital technologies, public broadcasters uniquely have an opportunity to empower this sort of citizen creativity in a way that I think really can take the lead in showing the rest of the world what citizen creativity can be about. So the best example of this, I think, was the lead that the BBC took in England about committing to making their archives accessible for British citizens to remix and to include in their own creativity. I was, you know, part of the conversations with them when they came to this decision. As they thought about what their mission was, that became an obvious way of delivering their mission, which was not to control what people saw as much as to enable people to be creators and participants in the culture. And I would think that, you know, organizations like Pacifica, at least, would be close to that way of thinking, at least thinking about where media is going to be in the next 5 years. And so that's why I'm happy to have this conversation. Let me just, it's hard to, in the speaking into the dark like this, to know whether anybody's even still there, but let me just leave it with that, and then I'm happy to take questions or push more in ways that you think it would be useful to push.
We're here.
We're here. Are you inviting questions now?
I'm here, but I was on mute.
Great. Yeah, I'd be happy to take questions, or, you know, if you want me to push in a direction more precisely, I'm happy to take that direction too.
Well, yeah, this is Steve Brown. I have a question which has bothered me for some time. The BBC, which has made its content available in a fairly unrestricted manner, is subsidized. They have no problems about supporting themselves other than political. Pacifica is not subsidized, and if it makes its content, which is what it has, a value, freely available in archives, let's say on the web, then it loses one of its means of supporting itself so that it could keep generating this information. So do you see some difference between a subsidized organization or a profit-making organization that has other sources of income like advertising, and Pacifica, which has no other source but people who contribute money either for membership or to sustain its information generating abilities?
Yeah, so I think that there are important differences, but let's map them more precisely here. What BBC recognized was that they had a huge archive of content that they had already created and that was just sitting there unused in their archive because the existing rules for getting access to that content required you pay a huge amount of money to get access to it. The consequence of that was that it just was never used. And so this was not so much about that they were subsidized to make it as they realize, as anybody realizes, once it's made and it's just sitting in an archive, it's doing nobody any good. Now, the question then is, I think as it relates directly to Pacifica, obviously what you need in order to drive attention and willingness to pay money to Pacifica is lots of strong commitment with your audience. The audience has got to feel like, you know, the way I feel like my public radio stations are things that I support every year, they've got to feel like this is an important thing to them. And one way to be an important thing to them, you might think, is just to be, you know, exclusively distributed in these commercial ways or these quasi-commercial ways over the radio. But I think, you know, what you ought to experiment with is thinking about a second way to become extremely important to your audience, namely a component to your audience's creativity. And as, you know, the audience uses Pacifica stuff, for example, in their podcasts or Pacifica stuff in other creativity that they're trying to make and share with others, then Pacifica would, you know, be a much more important member of that community. Now, again, with content you've already produced, it's not like it's a trade-off or substituting for, you know, access to the original content. Instead, what it's doing is enriching, would seem to me, enriching the connection you have with your community, broadening it, because, of course, then Pacifica people could be anywhere in the world, and making a stronger claim to your community when you say, look, we need support, and here's how you can support us. You know, give us money in the following six ways.
Yeah,
Rob,
I think maybe you missed my point. Can I just add something? Because I think my point was some people who will commit to Pacifica because they believe in its ideals and they feel it's a wonderful thing. There are others who will commit money only at the particular moment that they need something they feel is of value. And once they're finished, it's goodbye. Both are necessary to support this network. And I think that my point was that by giving away our archives free instead of at a very moderate charge, enough to sustain us, would lose that whole other source of funding which we need because we're always on the borderline.
Well, I'm not sure.
Larry, may I respond to that?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
This is Dave Adelson. You can't do the calculation just in terms of the loss of value because you also have to look at the way our economic model is right now, which is 1 in 10 people to whom we give the content away freely on the air donate back to us. So you have to do the trade-off. If you restrict access on the basis of ability to pay, do you restrict the number of people who are hearing it? If, for example, an open licensing system expands your audience by an amount such that the 10% of those people giving to you on the basis of reciprocal generosity as a business model outstrips the money you would make by restricting access, then you've both served the mission more effectively and increased revenue. The other thing is we recognize that people might be concerned about just the point you raised, and so one of the things that we've thought of, Professor Lessig coined the term a pod-safe archive, which is we might create...
I'm sorry, what was that term, David?
A pod-safe archive.
Uh-huh. Right.
We might create a particular subset archive to which things would be contributed that would be available for... And the one thing Dr. Lessig hasn't addressed yet is the dual licensing or the dual components of the license he discussed with us, which is one that allows free use for civic purposes and for civic distribution, but also builds into the license something that says if you're making money off of building audience with this content, then there's a relationship, a contractual relationship that kicks in where we get some portion of that economic benefit. But what we could do is establish a PodSafe archive, put content in there and see how it performed and compare these various models. So it doesn't need to be one of these all or none discussions that we always find ourselves trapped in. And if Dr. Lessig could talk about that particular license that he discussed with us, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, let me say two things about that. First of all, let me give you a very particular example that I think illustrates David's first point. it's a little bit removed from radio, but I think the dynamic is exactly the one you should focus on. There's a very important research council in South Africa called the Human Sciences Research Council. And what they did, they had about 250 researchers and 12 programs. What they did is they produced books which they sold. Then in 2001, they decided they were going to stop selling books, and they were going to make all of their content available for free, and then make it so that people could buy print-on-demand copies of the books if they wanted to, but they didn't have to. And after 4 years, they evaluated the effect of this change on the sale of books, you know, that single metric, which before was everything was sold, and now things were only sold voluntarily. And they found that in 4 years, their sale of books went up by 300%. And it's for the obvious sort of dynamic reason that David was talking about, and that is that as you expanded it, you increased the number of people who got exposure to the original content. That increased the proportion who wanted to actually buy the original content, and the net effect on sales was positive, even though, you know, ex ante, you might not have expected it. And I think that's the kind of dynamic you need to think about in this context. Now, the way in which you could do it is exactly what David was suggesting, and one very important point to highlight is that you make content available for free. It doesn't mean you're not able to also sell that content. And you might think, why would somebody buy it when they could get it for free? Well, the point is you can license it in a way where they're not allowed to get it for free for certain purposes, but they are allowed to get it for free for other purposes. So you put stuff into a PodSafe archive, licensed in a way that says if you're making non-commercial use of it, go ahead. Make as much use as you want. Put it in your podcast, so that every podcast has a little plug of, you know, latest news from Pacifica or something like that. And then Pacifica's brand spreads everywhere. But on the other hand, if you want to use this content in a commercial way, for example, broadcasting it on a radio station that has some commercial component, or even to raise money for a commercial radio station, or any other commercial use that you want to think, then you've got to license it with us in this traditional way. And one way to make that even more efficient is to build in some of the terms of those licenses, of that commercial license up front, so that people know what the commercial uses would be, but they also have the non-commercial uses for free. And that's a way of, in some sense, occupying both markets at the same time. And people obviously do that right now, and I think, you know, you'd be a great person. I think experimenting with doing it is exactly the way to think about it. You obviously shouldn't open everything you've got up tomorrow, and I certainly think you shouldn't commit to a project of closing everything for the next 5 years. You ought to have a project of experimentation where you, you know, really objectively try to evaluate what different strategies do for, you know, the different values you have. And obviously, money is one important value. It's one of a couple, I would think. And you begin to have real metrics of how to compare them. You'd have some real way to think about how to go forward.
This is Lisa. I was just going to ask a small technical question. When I hear this, I mean, just in case, let's say somebody should be concerned about, oh my gosh, people could be downloading this kind of stuff. Isn't there? Because I thought I've experienced this myself. But don't they have some kind of technology where they can make something available to listen to, but not so easy to download? I thought.
Well, you can certainly do that. Although, if we think about this future of citizen media depends upon being able for citizens to make their own program. And so that you know, depends upon, in some sense, them being able to get access to it and use it. And so you could make that restriction, but I don't think you'd leverage the power of this new form of expression if you did.
Can I make another comment on what Lisa said?
Sure, Dave.
If what we're doing is sort of announcing to the world that we're going to support this broader civic media, I think we're going to get a lot of benefit back. So everybody who has the opportunity to actually use that content, share it with other people, mm-hmm. they develop a positive relation to us. And I believe our, quote, business model is really that people are giving us money because they believe in what we do. The gifts we give them, for example, we give them videos that they can get for $150 that they can find online for $20. We mm-hmm. give them books for $75 that they can find online. So for 20 or less, they're doing that because they believe in our social role. So the more we are standing for liberatory civic media, I think the more they'll be willing to support that. And in particular, the one thing that's holding podcasting back is access to music licensing rights. And so if we had a PodSafe archive and we had local artists being willing to sign licensing agreements that allowed their content to be, you know, performances that they would perform in our studios in this archive, all of a sudden this whole civic movement of producers would start drawing on these archives, and our agreement with them would be you have to indicate in there that you got the content. The content was from the Pacifica PodSafe archive, and we might even work out ways of driving them to venues where they would eventually hear a fund drive pitch, because that's the important piece of this, which is it's great if our name goes out, but at some point we'll have to work out how we get the people who are hearing it to be willing to donate. And there are a whole lot of technical side things that'll do that. So anyhow, I'll stop there.
If I can just say one other thing.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. This is maybe not quite the same as what we talked about, but it certainly made me see even more the power of this Internet and integrating, you know, the radio and archives with it is, I remembered when the Honorable Minister Farrakhan came to New York and he was on the show On the Count. And, you know, I thought it was a dynamic interview and stuff like that. And then one day I just happened to be online looking at the final call, which goes out to a lot of people. And I saw right at the top link, Minister Farrakhan, WBAI, and a link to that archive. And I just remembered saying, wow, you know. And I don't know if they had a way of measuring, you know, how many people went from that link to the archive or not, but that was just one example of I was like, gosh, this could be really, really dynamic.
Exactly.
Okay, are there other questions? This may be a little bit challenging, so feel free to ask a question.
Yeah, I have a question. This is Greg.
Greg?
Could you talk a little bit about, under such a system, what would be the relationship to the creator of the content, to, in our situation, is often a volunteer rather than an employee, and may feel that they, too, are the co-owner of the material. How do we bring them into this system? Is this voluntary in each case? Do we have to negotiate this individually with each creator, or is there some way that we can get everyone on board at the start? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I apologize. I missed the first part of that question.
What I'm talking about in other media institutions, the creators of the content are normally employees.
Right.
And so, you know, they have already in a certain way signed away their rights, and so it's
right.
An institutional decision. In our situation, it's not so much an institutional decision because you're dealing to a large extent with volunteers who are not employees and who also feel that they are the co-owners of the material. How does such a licensing situation affect them, and what do we have to consider?
So the simplest way to deal with that is basically terms of service or terms under which they make contributions into the archive or get contributions out of the archive. So when you sign up to get stuff or when you add stuff into the archive, you can do it under an agreement that says you're going to make your work available under an equivalently free license. And I think that's the thing to focus on, not so much. You certainly don't want to create a world where you're claiming back all the creative rights that your citizens are producing. That's kind of a sharecropper vision of what we're trying to build. What you do want to do is encourage everybody who's creating works in this context to share them in some kind of equal way. So again, non-commercially, people can use it, but when it goes commercial, then they get to be the next Madonna if it turns out to be something really powerful and creative. And you can do that just by setting up agreements that govern how they get access to or make use of this work.
So we're talking about an area where the content can not only be accessed, but it can be manipulated by listeners or participants, and it can be sold. It can basically be given away free to the public, but it can also be licensed for pay under other circumstances. So I thought I had a few other.
That's exactly right. So So you're encouraging a certain kind of, in some sense, non-commercial creativity, but you back it up with a license that enables a certain commercial reuse.
I have a question.
Okay. Teresa,
this is
Lisa
Welch.
Lisa Welch. Thank you, Lisa. Please go ahead.
I have a question specific to Pacifica and our radio stations, and how there's only 24 hours in a day, there's only 7 days in a week, and we receive ideas for programming constantly, and we can't be continually revamping our programming. But some ideas, even though they don't make it onto the schedule, are magnificent ideas and deserve to be at least put out, worked on for an hour or two and put out for people to hear. And I wondered about using the Internet and using each station's particular website and maybe going through with some of these programming ideas and having them only available on the Internet for download. And that's it, just if I'd like to invite comments or ideas on that line.
So can I just comment about that? I think that's a fantastic idea, and there's actually something that's a Current TV, which is a new network that's started by Joel Hyatt and actually Al Gore, is trying to do that in the context of video. So basically that invites all sorts of creative contributions that are available for people to get freely if they want, but if it turns out that some great new idea is contributed in that context, then Current TV has rights with compensation back to the author to use it in a commercial way. And this could be a great way to, you know, encourage that kind of creativity so that you get to see it, but then you also get a choice about whether to include it in your mainstream distribution.
Can I comment on that too, Rob?
Let me see if there are other members of the committee that are trying to get into the queue, because
sure.
we're running short on time. Sarv, I thought I heard you out there.
Well, I was going to ask a very simple question. Lawrence, are you a subscriber of Pacifica Radio?
Oh, I'm a subscriber. I'm to KQED here in San Francisco.
Okay. How did you got interested in Pacifica?
Well, I didn't approach you and say, here's what you should do, but what I do in my role as chairman of Creative Commons is think about all the context in which this form of creativity actually might be useful for entities like Pacifica. So it turns out to be a model that's very attractive in Europe, and we have lots of branches in Europe who are experimenting with this in Europe, and I was involved with this with the BBC, so when David actually talked to me about ideas around Pacifica, I was happy to try to proselytize Pacifica around these ideas too.
Oh, that's great. That's really nice. Also, the question I was going to ask, you know, I look at the model of creativity in publishing side of the world, and I see there's a tremendous amount of publishing that goes on. And sometimes some people are saying that it's amazing that so much is published, yet so little is being said. And it's inundating this whole universe with tremendous amount of second-rate, third-rate kind of materials. If we bring open the world up to Pacifica's world and invite every creator in there and cataloging your stuff in there, is there a danger of that kind of becoming a library which nobody can find anything?
Well, I agree that's something to worry about. Although, I guess I come to this believing that you're not going to stop, Pacifica nor anybody else is not going to stop this move to a world of now a million channels, you know, where if you think of every podcast as a channel, a million channels out there. And then in the world of a million channels, the battle is the battle of it's the economy of the attention span. And so in that economy, quality has an advantage, and there's going to be advantages produced by new search technologies that help people figure out what's good and what's bad. But if you look at the way blogs have begun to filter out what's good and bad, it actually turns out to have a rationale to, there's a rationalizing process to it, which, again, nobody would have predicted when blogs were born. So I guess from my perspective, given it's going to happen, the only question is whether an organization decides to participate in it. And if you decide to participate in it in a way that encourages a community and building community around it, my view is you're going to be rewarded for that. And if you participate in the way the RIAA participates, by basically telling everybody to go away, then you're not going to be rewarded from that. And so, I can't predict. I just think that